People pay £2 for a gramophone record. There's no reason why they shouldn't pay 30 shillings for a worthwhile piece of
music. Well, they can't get that gramophone record later on. 3 and 6. I think they can't get the gramophone record later on for 3 and 6.
Well, the same thing applies. The people make up the capacrown is almost gone in this country. Hardly exists.
I didn't say 3 and 6.
No, 2 and 6 is gone. It's disappeared.
The answer, Ken, there is that in the middle 1950s when we had a spate of publishers coming in with 8 and 6 books, and there were at least 8 new ones, although paper was still doing a series then, and Victor Gardens was doing an occasional book, but not a science fiction. This, Dobson were in the field at that time. Tom Baldwin himself was one of the first publishing houses. From memory, they had a break-even point of about 2,000 copies. And the interesting thing was that over several years, and they bought ahead, not many of them made the 2,000. And this is one of the reasons why we had this very quick decline between from 1955 onwards. But people like Faber and the better publishers who'd been in had established lists before, and they weathered the storm. Now the situation now, where you have an 18-6, 21 shillings book, is that the break-even figure is not much higher, but the sales are very much higher. So although the profit ratio is probably smaller, they still are making money on science fiction, and in the 1950s they weren't. And sales are now going to libraries, and libraries are very high now. And this comes back to the death of the old
Sutton and Albert. The differences between hardback publishing and paperback publishing. Could somebody clarify these differences and the difficulties in the two?
As far as what's concerned, well, the actual method of putting a book through production?
Yeah, well,
it's something to do with the two cultures.
Basically, I think that they have the same problems as to how many presses can be used to print how many books in what length of time. But you still have a production deadline and a production period of time where the book is going through the various channels, and you just can't move it within a certain bracket. It has to take its time. Whether a hardcover publisher can, on a rare occasion, get a book out very, very quickly, and so can a paperback publisher, this can't apply to all the books they handle.
I think what he's really asking is what makes a successful paperback as opposed to what makes a successful publication of a book by yourself, say?
Is that what you're asking? Something similar. I mean, I'm getting at the sort of basic thing that books come in hardback and then are sold to paperback houses, or...
Well, before you said, somebody said something about that paperbacks no longer have the old-fashioned methods of distribution as the hardback.
I think one of the snags is that if you're going to sell, say, 25,000 copies of a book, as opposed to trying to sell 3,000 copies of a book, you're obviously going to meet buyers who are more buyers for a start. And there aren't many good buyers in the book trade, certainly not in paperbacks, which means that you're trying to call the people who are non-discriminating themselves. This is one of our big problems in paperbacks. We were using the old methods. We were trying to sell some man in W.H. Smith branch in Northampton who had begun life as a packer or something and had stayed a packer initially, but in fact was now the area manager or something. So how do you sell this man books? He doesn't even read books. As opposed to, say, Europe, dealing with a more sophisticated buyer, who you probably will send a proof copy to, and then you'll read the book, and he'll base his order for the book on his own judgment, as you'll base your print order on your own judgment. This doesn't happen in paperbacks at all, and until we go over that hump into a situation which we, virtually, as a publisher, decide how many books they're going to have, we couldn't really move.
One other, perhaps important basic difference here is that a large proportion of the hardback edition is going to go to libraries, public libraries. Ted Carnell was talking about the demise of the old Tutney Library, the circulating library, Smith's libraries, Boots libraries, Westminster libraries, Chain libraries, all these sort of people. This is true, these have gone, because on the whole, the people that pay their tuppence or fourpence a week to read their Western or their Thriller or whatever, now watch the play on Channel 9. instead. But, or they buy a paperback. Fair enough, the public libraries in the last few years in this country, and to a lesser extent in the Commonwealth, but nevertheless to an important extent, have been getting better and better and better. Public library service in this country is first rate now. Now, a large proportion of a hardback edition goes through those channels. No proportion, or virtually no proportion, of a paperback edition goes through those channels.
Yes, you know.
In order to get through those channels, we go what he describes as the more sophisticated bookshop. He goes to the wholesaler, the newsagent wholesaler, to the newsagent on the street corner, or the lesser Smith's bookshop, and the bigger Smith's bookshop too. But a much wider field.
Yes, I'd like to recall how this distribution amongst the hardback and the library compared to the States. You'd be more to answer that way.
I was very interested to listen because I was not too familiar with the way it looks over here. In the United States, the hardbacks are very largely designed for libraries, public, free public libraries, and also circulating libraries, which seem to have resisted in the States somehow. A couple of years ago, when Ballantyne was publishing simultaneous hard and soft cover books, I very often would see people carrying around circulating copies of a hardcover book, which they must have spent 40 cents to rent, and they could have owned it for 35, but they just didn't want to own a book. I guess they didn't want to build bookcases, or didn't want to be troubled dusting them. But these do exist, and I think that at least half of the editions of most hardcover books, bestsellers aside, do go into some form of library.
There's one big fundamental difference between the American market and the British market on this, is that we, by agreement, do not sell direct to public libraries, whereas in America, American publishers do sell direct to public libraries. We sell through booksellers.
Tony Richards.
Yeah, I only wanted to say really that with a hardback, you've got a very different category of audience, and in fact, the buying habits are radically different from those which apply to the paperback. If you're marketing a paperback, you can, I should think, allow the major part of your audience to be spec buyers, people who don't have much time to spend choosing a book, who perhaps aren't always particular about what book they would take on a journey or something like this. In other words, your marketing procedure is thoroughly different. You have to hit them rather hard than a hardback does. The hardback publisher, I think, Ron would agree, that a hardback public is a rather specialized thing. The people perhaps who take a greater degree of pride in their books than people who buy paperbacks. They take more time choosing them. They probably buy more systematically and methodically.
They may even read reviews.
Yeah, they may even read reviews. But this means that, in fact, the whole publishing operation is radically different, and that packaging is important to a paperback in a way which simply really doesn't apply to a hardback. Which leads me to wonder whether anyone has any comments to make actually on science fiction graphics, because I know we have no specialists here, but the fact that they should mostly be so awful is something which intrigues me. I wonder whether this is really just in relation to a lot of people buying them.
Another thing that I think has a good deal to do with the value of the standards of the hardcover publisher in the States, at least, is that the hardcover publisher receives half the fee the paperback publisher pays for the use of the book. And in many cases, he won't buy a book unless he can sell it to a paperback publisher, which tends to, I think, lower the standards that might otherwise apply and make the hardcover publisher consider whether 80,000 people will want paperback edition. So it sort of levels it out.
We've had another question in. We're down to about 5 minutes. Do you mind just pick on your new question?
Yes, arising out of Mr. Richardson's remark, I was going to ask, who is responsible, in fact, for the paperback covers? I mean, just as a general question. Yes.
Well, I mean, you have an art department which is fundamentally responsible. Ultimately, the decision as to how you treat a book in paperback is a combined editorial and sales decision. I ask this question fundamentally because the style of our own paperbacks is curiously irrelevant in the sense that we have made it a habit in the past to use details from surrealist paintings. whose connection with the content of the book, the specific content of the book, is very nebulous indeed. Yet, we have got an extraordinarily positive response from the people who actually sell the books about these covers, saying how good they are. And also, in fact, ourselves seem to be very good. Now, this is so much at odds with the sort of standard graphics. I'm not thinking here particularly of paperback so much, should we say, as a magazine illustration. Certainly some paperbacks, which sometimes tend to vulgarize, sometimes tend to put very sexy images, rather inappropriately on covers. I don't know what it is, maybe we have a different market. But why is it that really the standard of craftsmanship, the standard of imagination in science fiction illustration, is so appalling? You know?
Last question.
I wonder if I might pursue this and ask Mr. Poe a question arising out of a series of paperbacks bought by Thorpe and Porter and presumably an important to this country that way, the Beacon Galaxy novel selection, arising out of this point of graphics and...
Couldn't you have found some other question to ask?
How, in fact, does this arise? I mean, is it merely a matter of economics from the point of view of Galaxy publishing, selling to a paperback, people who want to market it in their own way, or did you have any say, or...
You said it exactly right. This was a case where the paperback people, the Beacon Publishing, remember their title, came to Galaxy some years ago with a proposal. They said, let us have some science fiction novels and let us package them our own way because you won't like the way we do it. And we didn't. And we guarantee you large sales and you will all be very rich. Well, it didn't happen the way they said. We didn't get very rich, and I've been plagued by the things ever since. This was an attempt to capitalize on the lustful impulses of American youth, as far as I can tell. They were meant to look like much sexier novels than any of them really were. And they had on them the sort of cover that Harry Harrison described as Don Walheim using a little while ago, the naked girl being clutched by a monster. And it just didn't work for us. I don't know how well it worked for Don.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to bring this to a conclusion now. The idea of the exercise is to keep the hall at least half filled for 2 hours, while those who liked an early dinner went out and came back again, and those who liked the late one came in to start with and subsequently went out. But for the benefit of those of us who are still here and haven't eaten yet, we're closing down at 8 o'clock. It was called From the Cradle to the Consumer, or From Conception to Consumption. And if Ken Slater had been with us, we should have called it From the Cradle to the Grave. Thank you.